To rehab an existing building or to build new from the ground up? That is the question. At least it's today's question. And it's a dilemma that plays out with rural investments in particular, because rural towns usually have many vacant lots and many dilapidated buildings from which to choose. Hi, welcome to Bring Back the Bustle, a podcast about revitalizing rural America. I'm Siobhan Jones, your host. This week, we're discussing the impact of the rural versus new build decision on rural investment returns. So that's where we're going to end up at the end of the episode, with a formula or a process for deciding which way to go. But it'll take us a little while to get there because investment returns depend on cash outflows and cash inflows. How much did you have to invest to earn a certain amount of profit? Notice I didn't say revenue, I said profit. So let's keep that in mind throughout the episode. That's where our focus is, on how much money we get to keep, not how much we bring in the door necessarily. Whether you rehab a space or build a new one from the ground can determine the profitability for medium-term investments like the ones we do here at the Rural Fund. There are three interrelated factors that weigh most on the rehab versus new build decision. Those factors are building use, the intended use of the building, number one, number two, your funding sources, and number three, time considerations. Even though these are interrelated factors, let's take them one at a time and then merge the considerations together to arrive at a process or formula for deciding on rehab versus new build. As I said at the onset, most rural towns have a large inventory of both vacant land and abandoned buildings. Typical available buildings include manufacturing plants, retail shops, industrial plants such as cotton gins or rice plants, strip malls, diners and cafes, theaters, schoolhouses, bus stations, railroad stations. These buildings are generally in varying degrees of disrepair. These buildings are representative of the old economy, but building use is changing with the shift in the rural economy. The new economy's primary real estate needs are warehouses for storage of consumer products sold online, data centers, power plants, and housing for urban transplants to rural communities. Also important are what I like to term quality of life buildings. These buildings house resident services such as groceries, resort amenities, and recreation and amusement offerings. This real estate is becoming as important to the livability of a community as courtyards and green spaces have traditionally been. With the exception of warehouse use, the inventory of old buildings tends not to be suited for today's uses. Older single-family homes are often better suited as inns or hotels, since residential real estate has gotten smaller and smaller over the years. Families are unlikely to have private ballrooms or dining rooms large enough to accommodate 40 or 50 guests, as was the custom of yore. It is architecturally possible to remodel some older buildings to house quality of life projects, but the rehab process for such conversions can be expensive, time consuming, and may drag down profitability of the project. While older buildings tend to be sturdier and more soundproof than new construction, the plumbing and wiring are outdated. Also, while houses were larger before the 20th century, commercial buildings were considerably smaller, so it's necessary to retrofit the building and to enlarge its footprint. Depending on your funding sources, a gut renovation may not be possible, and an add-on may not be simple. If it turns out you can't find a building that can be converted easily, in rural areas, space generally isn't a problem, as there is ample vacant land available for development. The downsides to new construction are the location of the vacant land may not be ideal. And it's usually not downtown, right? At least not in a contiguous plot that's large enough for your project size. Second problem, most new build projects won't qualify for incentives set aside for new investors, and they clearly don't qualify for historic preservation incentives, which leads us to a discussion of funding sources. Do you have more time than money? Because incentive money isn't free. You pay for it in time. You pay for it in concessions that you have to make in order to qualify for the funding. And you also pay for it in money. It takes time to apply. There are generally requirements to get the incentives, such as the requirement that you create jobs or that you hold the investment for a specified period of time. There are also out-of-pocket expenses, such as application fees. And if you're not familiar with the programs, you may need a consultant to assist, and that's a charge. And there are also finance charges, typically. In some instances, you may own some land, but there's a danger there. If you own land, that does not mean that that particular land is suited for the project that you want to do. It may not be in the best location, for example. So be sure that you don't force a project onto a site simply because you don't want to buy an appropriate site. The short-term savings may not offset the lost revenue from a poor location. But if you own an appropriate site, that may open up additional funding sources because of your ability to use it as collateral. It may also eliminate some costs, such as fees and the associated time to secure zoning and variance approval if you already have land that's properly zoned, for example. Next issue, is it a ground lease or is it fee simple ownership? Meaning, do you actually own the land or are you leasing the land and going to put a building on it that you own? A ground lease means not only paying rent for the land, but also losing the value of your equity at the end of the lease term. It means having a lower price when you exit the investment, since your buyer will have to take into account potential rent increases at the end of the lease term and the limitations that the ground lease places on their future exit options. So ground leases typically should be avoided because they lower the value of your investment. Sometimes the land or a ground lease is part of an incentive package that you're receiving from the government, for example. In that case, using the land grant results in an upfront savings of whatever land acquisition would have cost. Nevertheless, it still weighs on the long-term value of your investment, so you have to decide whether you can afford to accept the land grant. And the answer to that question may depend on whether you already have a customer waiting for the project, how quickly an investor needs to get the asset in service often is the decisive factor in a rehab versus new build analysis. In the case of rural fund projects, we take into account the most likely customer for each building. If the projected early user of the building is, for example, the construction team building a data center, then that project needs to be brought to market quickly to maximize revenues to be earned during the years that the facility is being built and to help us to build a brand around that facility so that it stays profitable after the construction team leaves. So in that instance, we're going to try to use property that we can rehab quickly. By contrast, if the end user is likely to be a permanent resident, we can pursue incentives that have a longer application process. In the case of power plants, the demand for energy is immediate. You want the power plant to be open as soon as the data center is open. There's usually a power purchase agreement in place, which means the revenues will flow as soon as the project is operational. Such a project could lose money chasing small incentives. Thus, investors in power plants should choose only funding sources that can be accessed without delaying the project or that are so sizable in value that the incentive outweighs any delay necessary to secure it. So we're running numbers, right? We're talking about investments. We're talking about money. You have to run the numbers. For a medium-term investment, such as opportunity zone investments, which have a 10-year time horizon, how much money investors earn during the holding period may depend on how they financed construction and how quickly they delivered the project to the market. If the project was self-financed, then that is part of the investment which must be recouped before you can be said to have earned a return on that investment, right? If, on the other hand, the project was financed with incentives, then the amount of incentive received is profit to the investors. However, securing incentives takes time. Any delay in bringing the project to market means lost revenue. Therefore, to the extent that the incentive application process caused a delay in the delivery of the project, the profit attributable to incentives must be reduced by the profit that the project would have earned during the weeks and months spent securing the incentives. Now, this isn't a calculation you should be waiting to do. This is a calculation that should be done as part of the planning process when you're deciding how to finance construction and whether to rehab or do a new build. Now we're at the conclusion part of this episode. Which is better? Should you rehab a building or build from the ground up? And it depends, right? That's what we've discovered. There are fewer incentives available for new build. However, unless a building is highly convertible and a gut renovation is possible, new build is generally faster. To repeat myself, do you have more time than money? If you forego the incentive money, do you have adequate alternative sources of financing? Is the incentive money a lot? For example, Opportunity Zone money is potentially more than 20% extra going in your pocket. If you forego the incentive money, can you make it up in other profits, such as operating profits or gain on exit? Run the numbers and find out up front before you close on the site. At the Rural Fund, we sometimes build from the ground and we sometimes rehab. If you invest with us, you can trust us to make a data-driven decision for each project. We are in the midst of a capital campaign. The minimum investment for this round of funding is $50,000. Considerably more will be required for the next round. Visit our website, that's ruralqrof.com, for more information about us and about this funding round. I'm Siobhan Jones. I hope you've been enriched by this analysis of rehab versus new build in rural communities. I will be back again next week, and I hope you will be as well.